Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, chronicling pro wrestling history from an insider's perspective since 1987. Now hosting this, the PW Torch Livecast, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday here at pwtorchlivecast.com. That is the website, our homepage, where you can access our shows live and on demand, and also see the schedule of our next upcoming show. I host Monday After Raw, Tuesday right after SmackDown, the midweek flagship edition of the show, and this Wednesday, Sam Roberts from the Sam Roberts Podcast and Sam Roberts Show joins me from Sirius Satellite Radio as my guest co-host to talk about all the big happenings in pro wrestling, WWE, and otherwise. And otherwise included a big story today with Flow Slam, Flow Sports, getting into the pro wrestling streaming network business. We'll talk about that on today's episode, at least touch on it, maybe more. Feel free to give us a call if you want to chat about that. And then Interview Thursday, I host at 1 Eastern on Thursday, same time as Wednesday at 1 Eastern. And then Friday, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant are back with the primetime Friday edition of the show, followed by Saturday Morning Wrestling, hosted by Jim Valley and sometimes Pat McNeil. Speaking of Pat McNeil, he is my guest co-host on today's post-Raw edition of the PW Torch Livecast, and I believe this is Pat on the line now. Pat, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Wade. Hello, you people.
Hello, Pat. All right, always feels good to get the hello, you people in at the beginning. When else would you do it? Pat, quick thoughts on tonight's Raw. My initial inclination here, you know, a whole 2 minutes after it ended, is some good stuff with Mick Foley and hyping the women. A pretty good job making it seem like three Hell in a Cell matches are a big deal, but a pretty rough last half hour. Well, I don't want to overdo it on the last half hour, but certainly the Lesnar-Heyman segment, a letdown on TV, and I think especially for fans in the building. What stood out to you?
I thought it was okay. I mean, you're dealing with, you're never going to get a great 3 hours and 15 minutes, you know, without any hitches to it. The Lesnar interview segment was funny because, you know, because they somehow had the idea that Paul Heyman could make the Minnesota fans heel on their hometown hero, Brock Lesnar, and that clearly was not going to happen. So,
no.
I don't know which genius thought of this idea, but you had Paul Heyman interrupting the Suplex City chants to tell fans to stop chanting Goldberg, and then you had, and then when he got some Goldberg chants, he complained that not enough people were, that only half the people were chanting for Brock Lesnar, which led to a round of Goldberg sucks chants. So I'm going to guess that's not what they're going for. The good news with that is they have a few more weeks before Survivor Series, and they can probably get the reaction they want to next week.
If the goal was to establish Brock Lesnar as the heel and Goldberg as a babyface, having Brock come out in his hometown of Minnesota, while geographically convenient for Goldberg, it's probably not the best idea. I have a feeling, and it is purely a feeling, not based on anything, any knowledge, that Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman might have known that this was going to happen. Brock certainly kind of seemed to take a little ironic satisfaction in that it wasn't working out. I think Paul Heyman thinks he can turn a crowd. And so I'm wondering, I'm kind of split, Pat, just trying to think of Paul's history. Did he know this was going to happen, but he was told what to do and he gave it his quote best shot? Or do you think he really thought the crowd would boo Lesnar because Goldberg was so likable last week and so popular last week, and that he just threw the mic in the air because he's like, I give up. This isn't going to work. We're leaving. What's your take on how you think they, who was surprised and how they approached it?
I'm guessing the former, which is that Heyman probably had a good idea what was going to happen, but decided to give it the old college try. So,
yeah. Okay, well, yeah. You know what, Pat? We got all show to talk more about what we thought, but we've got some callers on hold, and we might as well take advantage of that and bring some other opinions into the program. We've got a lot to talk about on today's program regarding Raw. That'll be our primary focus. There was a big announcement with Flow Sports today announcing a new streaming service that in a way is a competition to WWE Network, in other ways complimentary. They announced that the World Wrestling Network Live assortment of indie promotions signed an exclusive 5-year deal, and the Flow Sports app is available on Apple TV and Roku boxes, along with being able to log in on your laptop computers. We've got full details of that over at pwtorch.com. I think from I'm told, and that we probably have more details on this story than anybody else does up on the site. It went up midday today. Pat, just in a few sentences, your initial reaction to whether a competing streaming service, if the time is right, if Flow Sports seems, from what we know about them now, as having a decent shot at putting this together, it's not going to stop at just the World Wrestling Network. This is a network that is going to grow in terms of the variety of promotions affiliated with it. That I know for sure. I just don't think that they're going to reveal, or maybe they don't have deals completely done with some other entities. But your reaction to this news is a $20 a month, or what is it, $130 for a year, $150 for a year? Streaming,
I think
service.
It's 150. I think they said 150 a year. Well, my first reaction is, wait, am I allowed to submit an expense report in advance? Is that
for?
Can you work?
You're excited about signing up.
Well,
is that what you're getting at?
I think it will probably be cost effective for me to sign up. Yes, but I think that there's real potential here. A lot depends on what other groups end up signing up with this network, what other content they have, and I suspect that they're going to, like WWE does their free first month promotion, that this group is probably going to have to do a couple of promotions just to, you know, just to get started and get people used to the idea.
Yes, and I'm not touting that people should support something financially that isn't good, isn't worth their while. And Flow Sports is it's a big company now. It's new. It's an upstart. There's a YouTube video attached to the story I put up of the founders and the backstory of it. And they got $21 million in funding in August, and things are going very well. They're expanding from 7,000 square foot headquarters to something apparently 10 times the size early next year. Things are going well for them. So it's not a charity, but one reaction that I've seen a little bit of is, oh, WWE Network's a better value. You know, it's half as much. And the fact is
well,
there's an economy.
That's because you read my Twitter feed. But yes.
Yes, that too. I want to just say that the WWE has an economies of scale where they can afford to lowball. They can afford, or not lowball is not the word, but try to get a huge volume because they have this massive network to publicize what they're doing. The business model for a pro wrestling streaming company that doesn't have the power of USA Network and 13 trillion social media followers and all that, the price point might be a little higher. I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. You pay more for when you go to a small business and you buy custom furniture, you're going to pay more than if you go to the big box furniture store and you buy something from overseas. It's just sort of the way the economics work. The challenge is that wrestling fans are not going to hand over money, Pat, because, oh, it's indie wrestling and we're going to rah-rah support indie wrestling because it's a cause. They need to provide a really good product to earn $15 or $20 a month from wrestling fans. I don't think it's too much. Yeah. I think it's reasonable. You should have to pay, or that you might have to pay a little more for indie wrestling than what WWE can produce because of the economies of scale and the size of the company. But they need to have a product that is really good out of the gate without any bad PR about, oh, it doesn't work or it's confusing. They need good production values, good sound. All the things that have plagued so many attempts at iPay-per-view and streaming services in the past. So I don't think the price point is a big barrier, and I don't think that especially because WWE Network price is probably going to go up soon anyway. I don't think that should be, I don't think it should be a deciding factor for fans, but is $20 a mistake, Pat? Should they have started, tried to get lower out of the gate, or do you think if the buzz is good and they add a few more companies that fans will pay $20? Has WWE changed the way people perceive what they should get for $10, way too much for this to work at $20?
My guess is it's going to be very difficult because let's look at the three models which you have to choose from for this type of service. You have WWE Network, you have UFC's you have Fight Pass or whatever you call it, and you have New Japan. And I'm pretty sure none of those go for $20 a month. So that's going to be, I mean, that's going to be a tough sell initially. Now, the people who are already paying to see, you know, to see Evolve and Shine and the other companies that are on WWN Live, you know, they're probably going to appreciate, being able to pay less.
So that's absolutely true. We could talk for another half hour about that. I just want to get a little conversation started on that. Certainly, I'm willing to, we're encouraging people who call up if they want to talk about that in addition to tonight's Raw. They can. It's a pretty big story. I think that, as I wrote in the analysis in the news piece I put up at pwtorch.com today, the biggest thing it does, whether it works or not in the short run or the long run, is it's putting a lot of money into indie wrestling, and it's a chance for so-called indie wrestling. I mean, this could involve, I don't know that it's fair to call anybody who's in the streaming network getting some guaranteed money from Flow Sports independent anymore, but for lack of a better term, we'll call it that. It gives indie wrestling or non-WWE and non-TNA wrestling an opportunity to prove that they can earn the business of a lot of fans through good word of mouth on the internet and their own marketing to their existing fan base. And it's time to step up and deliver, but there's going to be more money going to the indie scene to slow down wrestlers either quitting because they can't make a go of it, which was a problem in the 90s with MMA fighters. You know, that's why Ken Shamrock went to the WWF, is he couldn't afford to stay in UFC at that point. This is going to afford probably dozens of wrestlers who either would go to WWE or quit or barely get by part-time to dedicate themselves full-time. This is changing the opportunities among the crowd of elite indie wrestlers to earn a living without having to work for less in NXT in hopes that is their gateway to WWE. And in that sense, I think there is justifiably short-term excitement among indie wrestlers because dozens of indie wrestlers are stand to benefit for the next year to 5 years because Gabe Sapolsky said it's a 5-year exclusive deal, or this, I think the press release said that.
Yes.
This is exciting for any wrestlers, and it creates more full-time jobs, Pat, because of the money that's being put into this.
Well, yeah, I mean, right now it really doesn't hurt anybody, except, you know, it might cause some indie promoters to try and get, you know, bigger, quicker than they can afford to, But I have high hopes for it, and I wish to inform any promoter that's out there, I'm available to consult on these issues for something in the low six figures, I think would be fine. So, Wade has my number.
Matt, if you could get that, I will wish you good fortune. I guess you are for sale for indie consulting fees, or you'll just write about it and offer some advice for free, like we're giving here. All right. Let's go to our first break here. When we come back, we're going right to phone calls. So stay tuned after this word from our sponsors. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we are back. This is PW Torch Livecast, available at pwtorchlivecast.com, the number one independent, current events, pro wrestling-driven talk show available in iTunes. And you can also find us on all kinds of popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android, and also PWTorchLivecast.com, which is mobile friendly. So you can just log on there to stream or download our shows directly from our mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly website. We are going to phone calls. I'm Wade Keller, joined by longtime 15-plus-year PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil. And we're talking about tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw and a little bit about that Flow Sports and the sub-channel Flow Slam pro wrestling venture. And we'd certainly like to hear from you on both topics. Let's begin with Jason in East Lansing. Thanks for calling, Jason. What have you got for Pat and me today?
Hey, Wade. Well, thanks. I'm glad I made your list. First, yeah. I think that's an awesome bit that Jericho's taken that is so simple, but just done perfectly. I called in the other day, and I'm going to repeat myself a bit when I say that I think the way they're handling Braun Strowman is just like Baron Corbin and how they're protecting him and finally getting some things right. You know, I don't want to harp on the things they do wrong. I like how they're building him up the card. It's stuff that you've said a lot. I'd love to hear your take on that. And then I'm sure you're going to touch on, I thought the main event was overall really well done. And then at the end, the wasted spot, I thought it was an unnecessary powerbomb into the apron. Not that I'm against the violence, but, you know, they got a big Hell in a Cell come up this weekend. They had a great show. I didn't think they needed to go that far. I think, you know, save that for the network. It leaves me wanting a little more. And those are my couple of takes for the night. Oh, lastly, Corey Graves, underrated. Yeah. I like how he calls it shoot, and he reminds me of Jesse the Body a little bit back in the day.
Cool. Well, first of all, I Jason, I would say Corey Graves is not underrated, at least in the Torch sphere, because I compliment him, and I think the Torch staff appreciate and comment on him too. So in that sense, I'm not quite sure how he's underrated other than I will just affirm that I agree he deserves appreciation and compliments. Pat, I think Corey Graves is doing a good job. How about you? I think I muted you during commercial, so I'm going to unmute your mic and bring you back on. Yeah, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I think he's doing a fine job. Byron Saxton, on the other hand, I'm not crazy about him. Let's just go with that.
The good part is most of the time you forget he's there.
That's true.
Well, most of the time. Okay, Braun Strowman. I agree. They're protecting him. I like Baron Corbin a little better because Braun Strowman feels a little bit me, cartoon monster, bulge eyes, I beat people up. There's a little bit of that in him. And Baron Corbin just feels like a real dude who just wants to kick some ass. He's cocky. He's confident. And then he wants to go clubbing with his buddies afterwards. And he doesn't want to deal with any of the crap that comes along with being a pro wrestler. He just wants to beat people up, win matches, be champion, and make money. And then go party. And that's more grounded. That said, there's room for both characters in wrestling. But from a comparison standpoint, I think that Braun is a different kind of character. They're doing him well lately, for sure. But Pat, I was not crazy about him being involved in the comedy list. The comedy list saga. Because it was played for comedy. And that's one of the problems I have. We'll get to the powerbomb on the ring apron in a second. But this kind of accentuates it. When Owens and Jericho and Seth are doing so much comedy, it's entertaining. It fills TV time. It might please their USA Network audience. But it's the wrong tone for a main event program involving a world title. And so Braun reading the list for the punchline of I don't see Sami Zayn, and then Jericho saying he's there and he's on page four, I don't think that was protecting Braun Strowman. But I got a kick out of it, but, you know, like, oh, that's kind of funny. Braun's looking for Sammy's name on the list, but I don't know that Braun's character, if you're not just looking to entertain people, but you're trying to protect him and build him into more of a serious monster heel, I think you have to sacrifice that entertaining comedic moment with him and Jericho and come up with something else in order to protect Braun and put him in a different category. Pat, your thoughts?
Yeah, and honestly, I wish they would, you know, I wish they would take better care to protect Owens and Rollins, since they're the two guys who are headlining this thing. I mean, I know it's not, I know you're not asking for $40 a show anymore, but still, you want your main guys to be on a different level than the guys who just who do goofy skits and participate in whatever live commercial read they're doing.
Do you agree?
I think general.
Do you agree with the Braun Strowman Jericho thing? Would you have edited that out, or do you think it was worth the entertaining value, the entertainment value, and no real harm was done?
They could have had somebody else do it. I can't think of whom right now, but they could have done it a different way. As for the question you initially asked, I think they're doing a better job protecting Braun Strowman than they have with Baron Corbin. I think Corbin's a more fleshed out character, though.
And another thing that bugged me about the Strowman Jericho segment a little bit, or bugged me is probably the wrong word, because I enjoyed it. I just think that WWE is serving two masters or two philosophies. Entertain the audience with these zany, wacky characters, and wouldn't it be funny if? A lot of segments are born out of that. But then there's how do we get people to take seriously the – and I'm not saying you have to go to the extent that Walking Dead did last night. I mean, that was hard to watch, and we're not going to do spoilers here, but because I know some people are going to be behind on it. But that was hard to watch, but I mean, I'm buying into the characters. I mean, I'm feeling emotions. I'm immersed in that world, and it actually felt good on Talking Dead when the actors came out. I was like, oh, God, that's right. This wasn't the real world. Shake myself out of it. It was just like – mm-hmm. It was like, wow, it was heavy. Okay, I don't think WWE needs to go that far. I get that that's not what they're doing. It doesn't work if they go that far. But I do think they need to make some choices and have the humor and zany stuff off to the side. And this is a point Bruce Mitchell's done a really good job of accentuating the last 2 weeks on the Bruce Mitchell audio show for VIP members. Main eventers are not typically able to do this kind of, quote, comedy entertaining and then still be positioned as serious world title match contenders. And I thought adding to that and kind of winding back to Braun, Pat, Jericho playing subservient to that degree to Braun, when a few minutes later he's going to be in the ring competing with your Universal Champion and the ex-champion and lead babyface and competing on an equal playing field. He's not a joke character in that match. He's a serious treated as an equal. That I think also is a little bit off kilter. I think they're defaulting too much to wouldn't it be funny and entertaining if we did this, and they need to take into account more protecting main eventers and keeping them separate from that stuff.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you're right, but that's not how they think. And, you know, and I mean, if you were to take Vince McMahon aside and explain to him that, you know, maybe less is more, you'd probably get this vacant look, you know, like you're just not able to less is what that makes no sense. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, but I'm not. Yeah. I mean, we're not here to give up. We're here to point out what would be better. Not point out that it's falling on deaf ears, because I think a lot of the approach that we take in our philosophy on how to do things is based on stepping back, not being immersed in the bubble, not being immersed in the politics, being able to speak freely and independently of what we've seen and studied works over the decades, and then watching a show like this and going, yeah, I was entertained. But I think they're losing sight of where the money is. The other thing, and I heard you say, Pat, I hear a lot of people say it too. Well, it's only $10, so. And I don't think fans should think, well, they owe me less of an immersive, believable, emotionally gripping storyline that I take seriously at a world title level because I'm only paying $10 or nothing, you know, instead of $55.
Oh, no.
And one of the reasons why is, hey, it should just be as good as it can be, regardless of the price. You don't say, well, it's cheaper, so we only have to try one fourth as hard. And I know you're not saying that, but I want to add to it. They're now trying to get 1.5 million people to pay $10. That means 1.1 million of these people were not buying the pay-per-views because it was too expensive for them and it wasn't worth it at $45 or $55. Their model is built not on satisfying people who go, wow, it's $40 cheaper than I'm used to paying. I won't be as picky. What the model will only work if they can get the 1.1 million who didn't buy non-WrestleMania and SummerSlam and Rumble pay-per-views to think something that wasn't worth $55 is worth $10. And so they need to be on their game because they're playing to a much larger paying audience than they ever have for these 16-plus pay-per-views a year now.
Yeah, there's something to that. But plus, a lot of WWE Network, you know, a lot of what they push is the overall package of it, which, you know, which includes worst case getting to watch something that you actually enjoyed from 10, 15, or 20 years ago.
Yeah, although I don't think the majority of the 1.5 million and where they want to grow are coming from people who want to watch, you know, Trish Stratus or Steve Austin. You know, the majority are going to come from people who are into today's product, and that's a challenge I face. All right, let's go to our next phone call here. Thank you. Oh yeah. Oh, the bobber bomb under the ring apron. I don't leave that off.
Yeah.
Pat, is that too much? Is that a risk of injury? And you'd say, well, let's trust the wrestlers. They know what they're doing. I don't have a lot of faith in that anymore after all the injuries we've seen. Sasha Banks, Finn Balor, and on.
Yeah. Even if you trust the wrestlers, there's still a risk of injury, and some spots are obviously more dangerous than others. Plus, you know, maybe there's a spot that you want to save for the actual pay-per-view match. I don't know. I mean, I understand that you want to tease that Seth Rollins is hurt going into this match, but maybe there's a different way to do it.
We will, by the way, prioritize local phone numbers on our caller list. So if you attended tonight and want to participate, if I see a local Minnesota area code, I will bring you on quicker. And I'm going to live up to that immediately here by bringing in Chris from Shoreview, Minnesota. Chris, welcome to the show. Were you at the show tonight?
I did not go this time, Wade. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I tried.
I watched it on TV with you guys.
I watched it on TV too. I didn't go tonight either. I'm actually not regretting it after watching the show tonight, but it just logistically didn't work out. But your thoughts, Chris, on the show? What'd you call about?
Well, I called about a couple of things. I called in a few minutes late, and I heard you guys were just finishing up talking about the Goldberg thing, and you guys were talking about what I saw too is that they were trying to make Brock Lesnar come off as the heel, and it just wasn't working. The crowd wasn't having it, and it really seemed like you said, Paul Heyman just threw his hands up and said, "We're not doing it. We're done." And that might have been, he might have said what he was planned to say and just let it be. But my thought watching that was, why can't they just frame it as Brock Lesnar is a legitimate fighter who's been around and has these credentials that he's built up in the last over the last 10 years since they fought last. And Goldberg hasn't been doing anything. And Goldberg sort of has, you know, a big mouth or a lot of guts or however you want to frame it, coming out and saying that he can, not only will he fight Brock Lesnar, but he can take Brock Lesnar. And then just sort of let the crowds do what they want to do. You know, they do it with so many other things. Why can't they just do it in this scenario? And if they do it in a context like that, I think it would work. It would work for fans who want to cheer and boo whoever they want.
Pat, what do you think about that? Chris, let me go to Pat on this. Do you think they'd be better off not trying to tell the crowd what to do? They tend to default to that quite a bit, and now that seems like they're facing a pretty big headwind here trying to get at least Minnesota fans to play along.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they would be better off dictating what they want to do, but generally they have a narrative that they want to present, and with Vince McMahon in charge, they're going to present it even if the people reject it initially.
Roman Reigns.
I mean, you can go through, it's not just Roman Reigns. You can go to over 30 years of that sort of thing happening. It's a lot easier to correct when everything was, you know, back in the day when everything was pre-taped and they had weeks before from the time that they taped it to the time it aired. But it's kind of hard to do on the fly live now. And this one should have been obvious.
Yeah. I'm holding off judgment until he's not in Minnesota, you know, till Lesnar's not in Minnesota. But I do have to say, I'll add this, Chris, it's sort of tangential, but I think they hurt themselves in the Minneapolis market by advertising Brock. The crowd liked him. And it just felt like, not mid-promo, but before it was really going wherever it was going, or before it got there, Paul just throws a microphone up, Brock laughs, and leaves. It felt like they just said, screw it. It's not working. Let's leave. When you advertise Brock Lesnar, and that's what you give fans, just Brock walking to the ring, doing nothing, snickering, and then leaving, that's not giving fans their money's worth. There's a problem with the Brock Lesnar presentation, and it's not just Minnesota, but Minnesota especially. That, I mean, this was a hook for this show. And I just don't think that's enough for the prices that they're charging. People pay to see Brock. You don't hear him talk. You don't see him do anything. I think that WWE thought, what do we need to do to tell our story on TV without thinking, what are we doing to this market and the fans who paid money in particular to see Brock by giving them almost nothing? Now, Pat, maybe you would retort, that's what Brock usually does. How could they expect more? I would say they might always pay a price for having that attitude, but today, tonight especially.
Yeah, and you got to keep in mind that, you know, people who go to these shows, and people who even go to the live events, they charge over $100 American for ringside. I mean, for the best seats.
Yeah.
And you know, if what you're getting is not what's advertised and not what you paid for, that's a real problem. I understand that Brock Lesnar is not going to be in a match, and there is a established pattern of how they build to things with their part timers, but I think you're going to have some disappointed people, and I think it's, I mean, they, I think they've gotten better on, from what I've heard, on trying to at least deliver dark matches, especially when they have shows where, you know, they don't have a lot of wrestling content. But there's always going to be that tension there, and
Chris,
you want to over deliver.
Chris, real quick, we got about a dozen people on hold who we're not going to get to everybody. So go ahead and ask another question or make another point a little rather swiftly, so we are fair to everybody.
Sure. I'll be real quick.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about what you were saying about the way WWE presents things, and I just wanted to say it goes back to something you say all the time with. They need to present wrestling as a sport and have everything, the good guys, the bad guys, the soap opera, and everything needs to be presented in that context. And until WWE realizes that, they're going to have those kind of problems where things just don't make sense and things seem to be cast the wrong way. And then one positive I wanted to say about tonight is I enjoyed the Mick Foley promo. They finally let Mick Foley go out there and do his thing, just talking about how dangerous the Hell in a Cell is, and that's how they should have presented it in the first place, especially in context of the women's match. So I'm glad that they did that, and that's all I have. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, Pat, what'd you think of Mick Foley's promo that Chris just complimented?
I thought it was good, and I thought it was necessary because I thought with somebody like Michael Cole in charge of that segment, that could have gone badly.
Yeah,
I think
Mick Foley's, Pat, the perfect guy to talk about the Hell in a Cell. And, I mean, the way he talked about, you know, I went in a man and I came out damaged and I have nightmares. Like, I want that to be how the Hell in a Cell is framed. Not, I had this glorious moment because everyone talks about how cool it was to see me get thrown off the top of the Hell in a Cell and then fall through the roof. That shouldn't be a celebratory moment. And I thought Mick hit it, had the tone right. This is a nightmare. I need to know that you two, who I love and I'm proud of, well, you know, Charlotte, you're a little Kerrigan, but I want to know before I let you sign this paperwork that you know what you're getting into. And that's the ominous gravity of how you should sell a cage match or a Hell in a Cell match. So I just thought it was really tremendous.
Yeah, I'm really glad that he was there for that reason. It always helps when Mick Foley can do comedy, but he can also put over stuff that's supposed to be serious as being serious, which is something I'd like to see more of.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break, and although it's a little skewed when we start 12 minutes into the hour after Raw, but our roughly 30 or 35 minute break here. And when we come back, we're going to roll through more calls. I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and pwtorch.com, joined by PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil, whose pay-per-view previews appear every weekend before major pay-per-views, and much more, including roundtable contributions and audio show contributions, including the VIP Real Deal with Pat McNeil. We'll now go to a break about our sister brand, MMAtorch.com, with some continued follow-up on ongoing big stories headed into the big UFC 205. Some interesting stories going on. Jose Aldo saying he's not going to retire. Dan Henderson saying he's not going to retire. And Uriah Faber saying he is going to retire. Catch up on all those stories and more. Here's some details. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we are back. Don't forget, you can support us by shopping at Amazon by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon. It's just a brief detour. You click on the link on that page that takes you to Amazon, where you were headed anyway. But everything you buy in that shopping trip, we get a little commission for. It's not a lot, but it adds up when more of you do it. And it's a way to say thanks for what we do. You're spending the same amount of money on the same products that you're going to buy anyway, except we get a little of Amazon's profit in exchange for the 20 seconds that I spent on this show telling you about how we can all work together and make the world a better place here at the PW Torch livecast. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Back to the phone lines we go, and you can call us at, I think I gave them the numbers out, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Got a ton of people on hold. Hope that you'll also call tomorrow after SmackDown concludes, AJ Styles against Dean Ambrose. And then Wednesday, Sam Roberts of the Sam Roberts podcast, the Sam Roberts Wrestling podcast, and Sirius Satellite Radio. When I was in New York City in May, I was in studio with him in New York City and did his show, which was a lot of fun, and with Katie also. And now he'll be making a return to the PW Torch livecast as a guest co-host on the midweek flagship edition of the livecast, 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific time, this Wednesday, talking all things pro wrestling. All right, let's go to 803 next. 803, thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, this is Eric from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, thanks for calling. Eric, what do you got for us?
Well, if they wanted Lesnar to come out as a heel, they probably should just put him in an Eagles jersey before he came out.
I know. You know what? I wrote in my Raw report. It's up on pwtorch.com right now. When it wasn't working, you know, and you could tell Paul and Brock were kind of like, oh, God. I said a lesser man would have taken a shot at the Minnesota Vikings right now, but Paul doesn't want to go that cheap. You know, he knows that would work, but he's not willing to go there. He knows that's the cheapest way to get heel heat, and it's so localized. You know, you're going to turn the Philadelphia fans, you know, you're going to turn Lesnar babyface with the Philly fans. So he didn't do it, but I agree that probably would have worked. But I kind of respect him for not doing it, even though I'm not sure I like the choice he ultimately made, but there's other options.
Yeah, and having him in the purple tie and Lesnar with the Suplex City, you know, Minnesota jersey probably didn't help, you know, either on that one.
Yeah,
but
what was that about? I mean, it makes you wonder if they were sabotaging it, you know? I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I missed some of the beginning of the show. I missed, like, the first hour, so I wasn't really sure what was going on, you know, completely in the main event. I knew they were doing the triple threat, but for weeks it seems like they've been kind of fostering a split between Owens and Jericho, and then in the main event it basically was a handicap match which they had the champion lose going into a pay-per-view, which is kind of their, you know, motive. Is they tend to throw away, you know, like have champions lose going in, or contenders lose, like Kendrick lost clean,
yeah,
you know, before his match with Perkins. And I don't know what their strategy is in having people on the pay-per-views look weak before the pay-per-view. So
It's Pat, it's tried and true Vince McMahon formula. Nobody will ever see it coming if the guy who's going to win on Sunday loses on Monday. And so they do it all the time. It's like Josh Matthews always carries with him the WWE announced style book where, and he did this last week on Impact, and it drove me nuts. He gave away the finish of every match, because any big match, if there's going to be a kick out, you can count on Josh Matthews declaring the match over as the referee is hitting the starting one and two. But if it's the actual finish, he just counts along, and then it's like, oh my God, that's it. It's so predictable, and it's not clever. It doesn't work. I think the odds should go way up now, Pat, on Brian Kendrick winning the championship on Sunday, because he lost, right?
Yes, and I mean that's one of Vince's tropes. The other one we saw tonight was, you know, Curtis Axel just turned babyface in his hometown, loses to Bo Dallas, who, you know, nobody who's actually getting a push should lose to Bo Dallas. I'm sorry.
Brought to you from the mind of somebody who thinks shoving unsuspecting people into a swimming pool is the funniest thing ever.
Yes, you probably still have. Did I leave that clip in there for you? That's high comedy for Vince McMahon. Except when Shane does it to him, then he gets angry.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You can't have it. You can't be consistent. You got to have a double. What's what I'm looking for? Double standard.
Double standard.
Yeah. All right. There's way too many clips here, Pat, for me to know where to go.
Yeah. We'll maybe some other time. Yeah. I understand.
I do see Vince 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Do you know which number it is?
Those are from Camp WWE. So.
Oh shoot.
Probably none of the above.
Yeah, well, we're grinding the show to
a
halt.
Well, something all about right. a full. There's anyway.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I scanned. I don't have a big enough screen to see all of them at once. All right,
I understand.
All right. So, well, anyway, back to you, Eric. I can't even remember what you brought up. Oh yeah, champions losing. Anything else for us?
Yeah.
Or challengers?
Well, I think that I think you can pin back the main eventers doing kind of goofy, crazy stuff all the way back to probably DX was the first time, like in the mid 90s DX. And, they did the zany stuff, but at the same time, they protected Michaels when he was in DX and he was the champion. Even though he did the zany stuff, when he was in the ring, he wasn't doing crazy stuff, and they didn't have him losing throwaway matches either. So, just my thoughts on it.
I'm with you. Thanks for calling, Eric. Good to hear from you. All right. Very good. All right, let's
see.
What
happened, we would normally push them in the pool.
Right.
And the look on someone's face when you shove them and they're in the air and they're saying to themselves, no. And they realize that they're completely, totally wet. Watch the whole deal. It is one of the funniest things in the world.
What?
All right, I found it.
There you go.
When you want to understand why things are happening on Raw, that was Vince being totally serious. And he thought it was profound, and he was sharing a slice of his personality that we'd all understand. And I think we're all just kind of tilting our head at that one. All right. Speaks for itself. All right, let's go next to 716. 716, thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, this is Lee from Buffalo, New York.
Hey, Lee, thanks for calling. You a first-time caller?
Hey, no, I called last week. I'm really excited about Sam Roberts coming on. I'm hoping my call from last week catalyst for that.
It probably was, and we'll say it was.
Yes, sure.
There's no harm in saying it wasn't. I mean, there's no point in that.
Yeah.
All right.
I want to talk about the Charlotte Banks Foley segment. I really liked it, other than I think there was like a little, I guess it was a little off in just who was yelling when. It seemed to not quite flow as far as that goes, but I thought the psychology was interesting in it. I think your criticism early on in the build up to the match was right on point when you said, you know, this shouldn't be something that's a reward. They rushed into this. Why would the champion challenge someone else to a Hell in a Cell match? I think this was kind of like a little bit of a retcon on the psychology of it. You know, both seem so focused on each other and like the history behind, you know, they're both making history, or I'm going to be the greatest in history, et cetera. But they're so focused on doing that Mick Foley comes out to kind of remind them and in turn remind us, you know, of the seriousness of the situation. And, you know, when he comes out, you know, and says, like, you know, I had my hip replaced, look at the way I walk, you know, there's a real, like, I felt a tinge, thinking about that, you know, seeing him now. And they both seem to ignore that. So I'm wondering, you know, where they go with this to make, you know, after the Hell in a Cell match. I mean, I think it's a perfect time for, you know, like a kayfab injury or something, even though they already did that and kind of blew it off. But I'm just wondering where they go with it after, because I feel like after this segment, they've got to keep it that serious, because I just, you know, hearing Mick Foley say that, I don't want them to just blow that off.
Yeah, Pat, what do you think of what Lee said, and do you think that that Charlotte and Sasha, their tone and their reaction and body language fit what Mick was trying to the point he was trying to make and the tone he was trying to set about the match. Did it seem to resonate? Did they react right?
I don't know really that they did. I mean, it felt kind of, I think the word I'm looking for is stilted as to how it came off.
Yeah.
It might have been one of those things where they would have been better off, you know, giving them bullet points and letting them just swing away at each other. Of course, you can go to the other extreme. My favorite example of that is some years back when Ring of Honor had had Roderick Strong and Jay Briscoe feuding for the title, and they did a face-to-face promo about their match on the next show, and the promo just ended with like 15 seconds of them literally screaming F you at each other. Mrs. McNeil was horrified, by the way, but it fit the tone. Yes, it's something that they would have done in real life. Yes, but you know, you can take that too far.
All right. Yeah, I don't think it was a perfect segment, Lee. I thought Charlotte was tremendous, as usual. But I think Sasha's likable and she seems earnest in her, you know, obviously we are reminded every week of her love and respect for Eddie Guerrero and how much she's just, you know, happy to be here in WWE and all that. And she's got to watch it. So it doesn't seem to become kind of like a bit of a cliche or, you know, people just like, oh God, well, you know, it's like, it's cool, but let's not talk about it every week. But I do think they probably could have seemed like they were hearing a little more what Mick was saying. Instead of just saying, you know, well, I don't care. I'm just going to be the best. I deserve that belt. I'm going to beat you and all that. It felt like Foley was kind of the star and the other two wrote their promos without really feeling fully what Mick was delivering to them emotionally. And that is where I think Pat's right. Maybe some bullet points might have been better and have it feel a little more organic.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing if they followed up correctly. I mean, if they're ignoring it and don't fully anticipate what, you know, how serious it is, and then they get to it. That's why I mentioned like the kayfabe injury or something like that, so that because they clearly didn't seem to ignore it, following up on that with, I don't want to say we weren't ready for it, but we didn't expect it to be this. We didn't heed your warnings, Mick. You know, so something to that effect.
Yeah.
After.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
No, that's
all right.
That's
cool. Thanks, Lee. Yep. Very good. All right, cool. Well, I hope to hear from you again, Lee. I think you made some really good points. Excellent. All right, so we'll move on. Let's go next to 715, and then on deck 540. So 715, you're up now. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is David Lauer. I'm from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I was just at the show tonight.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
What,
talk to us.
It was... such a hot crowd. I thought it was really great from the get-go. Everyone was really into it. And then they came out with Dana Brooke and Bailey in that weird segment, and it just felt like we were in a time machine and went back 15 years. And the whole crowd, from that point on, they just weren't into the show as much anymore.
Yeah, they were chanting boring really swiftly, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. It was very odd. I didn't like it at all. And then after that, they go to the Shining Stars, and then there was the Cruiserweight match was even worse. It was like crickets in the
building.
That was
dead.
It felt like everyone in the arena got a text message saying that their grandma died, and they're all just sitting there just like, And then with the Braun Strowman match and Sami Zayn, that was all right, but then the Lesnar thing, I just couldn't understand. It was like they were trying to troll the audience into getting them to chant against Lesnar, and why would anyone chant against Lesnar when you're in his home market?
Yeah. Well, okay. I want to plug one thing from that. The Cruiserweight division, and this applies to the whole division, the whole roster. Stop having people on promos talking like Rich Swann did about his goal in life is to entertain people. If you want people to care about who wins a match and who doesn't, and if you want them to believe that what's happening in the ring hurts, more of what Mick Foley was talking about. It hurts. More of, and we can debate whether they should have done it, but more of selling that getting powerbombed on the edge of the ring apron might actually still hurt 6 days from now and affect your ability to compete in Hell in a Cell, unless of a guy dancing his way to the ring and then airing a soundbite promo of him talking about his goal in life is to party all night and entertain. You need to actually have a goal of winning matches within the narrative structure of a wrestling show if you want people to care about your matches. So that's part of it. It's not the whole problem, but that's part of the problem. Pat, your take on cruiserweights as of tonight, and it's probably the same story it's been for a few weeks now. But what are there any positives that you see to go along with some of the negatives?
I've interviewed Rich Swann. He is a great guy. Radican knows him better than I do. He loves the guy. I thought that entire segment was counterproductive, not only because you're showing, you know, Rich Swann, who's Raw Cruiserweight Jobber, but you also have Brian Kendrick losing to Rich Swann, Raw Cruiserweight Jobber. And I think, you know, Swann could be, if Swann was presented like he is on NXT, you know, people could get into him. But that crowd was just dead, and I think our caller nailed the reasons why.
Well, and part of the reason is they position the cruiserweights as this sort of a novelty act, and they've been better about not overtly saying it's so exciting, and they'd all be homeless and unemployed if it weren't for the goodness of Triple H hiring them, because he recognizes that you smart internet fans love these little guys who do all these spots. They've toned that down, but what they need to do is start.
Which is good.
Yes, it is good, but they need to stop treating them like they're third hour filler, and they need to. And it's not too late to start doing the right thing, even if you would say the damage is done. It's going to be hard to fix. It's not an excuse to keep doing things wrong. So let's start next week doing things right. And I don't think they get what they're doing wrong. That's the problem. I don't think it crosses their mind that if you don't frame some people as stars, not just guys who party all night and like to entertain by dancing and then doing high spots, that doesn't work. You're not going to get people to care. You have to frame it as if it's one of the most important things in the world that's happening. And it just doesn't cross their mind to do that. And thus, as David said, it's time to check Twitter.
Yeah, it's too much like, I mean, if you go and watch some of the old WWE live, old school stuff from the 70s and 80s, it's too much like, and next month the adorable midgets will be in town. I keep expecting them to call them the adorable cruiserweights, the lovable cruiserweights, and fortunately that hasn't happened yet.
They've come pretty close. I'm waiting for Stephanie to squeeze their cheeks and say, good three-star match, just like we paid you to have. David, anything else from your, was there a dark match?
There was Roman Reigns and Rusev after the main event, right as Rollins was walking off after, like, injuredly walking off after that powerbomb. Rusev came out with Lana, Roman Reigns. I ended up leaving, like, 2 minutes into that. I got to see Lana, who's beautiful and gorgeous, and I love seeing her. But I knew the whole crowd, everyone who was there, was really into Roman Reigns, and I knew he was going to win, and I'm not a Roman Reigns fan, so I was like, I'm out of here.
So wait, breaking news, the crowd cheered Roman Reigns?
It was very mixed for his entrance, but once the match got started, everyone was chanting USA and really getting behind him.
Oh, cool. All right. That's breaking news.
But before the show for the Superstar taping, they did have a six-man tag cruiserweight match, and match got a really good reception from everyone. So I maybe that's part of the reason why the one with Rich Swann and Brian Kendrick, it didn't get over as well, is because maybe everyone already felt like they got their fill on the cruiserweights earlier in the night. But thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Pat, wait a second, Pat. David, before you go, do you know off the three wrestlers and versus three, like who participated and who won?
I think it was Gulak. Tony Nese and Jinder Mahal, but
Area Daivari. It was Area Daivari.
Yeah.
And was Cedric, Sin Cara, and I'm trying to remember who the third one was. I think Lince Dorado on the babyface side.
And what I was going to ask David is, did anybody stand out among those six? Was there one person who stood out the most to you that you remember and think, yeah, they captured the crowd's attention, or was it just kind of a lot of spots and it was kind of an exciting warm-up match?
Tony Nese and Cedric Alexander both got very good receptions, I felt like.
Cool. All right, David, appreciate you calling in and checking in after the show. It's one of the cool things about doing this right after Raw.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I love the show.
Absolutely. You bet. I appreciate it very much. By the way, we have a VIP membership. If you're not a VIP member, check out details at pwtorchvip.com. Nearly 30 years of archives of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. Some really cool stuff. Every Saturday morning, we put up a new 20 years ago back issue. We're in the heart of the Monday Night War right now. Fascinating behind-the-scenes details that are not in the WWE official documentaries, that aren't in the books. It's real-time coverage with a lot of backstage information on what was going on in both major companies at that time, plus ECW, and so much more. Cool stuff in those back issues. It's available. And when we put the back issue up, you can read it in an all-text format on your phone, or you can open it up as a PDF on your laptop, desktop, or tablet. So it's cool ways to read it. We put up every Thursday night a new retro radio show. Right now, most of those are early 1992 Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi out of New York, and with some big-name special guests. In fact, I think the show that just went up had Vince Russo, Jim Cornette, and Dave Meltzer all on. So fascinating stuff. I'm a regular guest on the show, and if you want to hear what I was saying about pro wrestling in early 1992, go VIP, and you can also hear my guest appearances throughout 1991 on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show, because we've got dozens of those shows up by now. Ad-free access to this show. If you don't listen live and you listen on our podcast RSS feed, VIP members get access to a podcast app compatible feed that is completely separate and includes this show minus plugs and commercials. We edit out most of them. We try to edit out all of them once slips by every once in a while, but also tons of other shows. The Real Deal with Pat McNeil, Bruce Mitchell audio show that I host every weekend, The Fix with Todd Martin that I host midweek. Both of those are usually 2 hours each. The post pay-per-view roundtables every single day, the Wade Keller hotline, breaking news, answering your questions in depth, reviewing Raw, which I'll be doing after this show. I'll be marching through Raw chronologically, commenting on everything that happened on the show. And if you didn't see the show, you'll feel like you did when I'm done. And if you did and you just want to know what I thought, I give that to you on the Wade Keller Hotline every Monday night. Same thing on Tuesday nights with SmackDown. So much more. Ad-free access to our VIP website with all the content on our free website, plus bonus content, including the new Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter every week with my cover story, my end notes commentary, Bruce Mitchell's weekly column, Greg Parks' weekly column, roundtable reviews written and scored after pay-per-views, my newsletter exclusive SmackDown report, my Raw report, news, and more. So a lot comes with the VIP membership. You can read all about it, including testimonials from VIP members talking about why it's worth it to them to subscribe to a pay service to get an added layer of high-end content that we're very proud of with a great staff of contributors. So check that out, pwtorch.com/govip. If you like what we do here at the livecast, I think you'll really like giving VIP a try. Some just great archives, great audio, great newsletters, ad-free experience both on the web and in our audio. So check it out, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, back to the phone lines. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pat McNeil, in case you're joining us midstream and wondering who these voices are. And we'll now go to area code 540, as promised next. 540, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys, this is Michael from Virginia.
Hey, Michael, good to hear from you again. What have you got for us?
Just another note on the cruiserweights. Do you think that with them appearing on both Raw and NXT that it might compromise the division, or it just shows the line in the sand non-commitment that Vince has toward them versus, you know, seeing them on NXT where they're also facing guys who are considered in the heavyweights type division, and just that there's not really a dedication yet on where they're going with that. And then I have one other question I want to ask you.
Sure, yeah, Pat, what do you think about that cross-pollination of sorts?
I suspect that the cruiserweights being on NXT is kind of temporary, until NXT gets more of their current roster on television so fans can react to them, and I suspect that there'll be some people moving to the cruiserweight division, and we might even see a couple people who are on Raw in the cruiserweight division just come back to NXT or leave.
What else, Michael? I agree with Pat.
With the announcement today with, was it Flow Sports and WWN? Was that the correct company involved?
Yes.
Yep.
I haven't given too much thought to it yet, and you'll probably be able to frame it better than I would, but I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe, do you think maybe in a way that this is a throwback to a modern day version of seeing territory type wrestling return, where, you know, Vince went national and everybody else went out of business, and then of course the rise with one big company, and now there's at least going to be a platform for people to see all these other companies out there for a fee that is more, I guess, affordable, rather than paying $5 here, $5 there for all the different little shows that are scattered about. And maybe it's a modern resurgence of that type of idea.
Well, I think that's the goal for that, Michael, to be part of it. I mean, this is the announcement of WWN Live is just the beginning. I mean, that is not the whole thing. And I mean, you can argue maybe they should have waited till they had six or seven deals secured, or mentioned that in the press release. You could argue that. But I mean, there's more announcements to come, and it could be as soon as tomorrow or later this week. Or, I mean, I think some I's are being dotted and T's crossed, and, you know, it's just a matter. I mean, a lot of indie promoters I know have reached out to me and been like, is this what's going on here? Is this something we can be part of? I mean, I know there's interest in what Michael said. Indie promoters want to have an outlet to show what they're doing and reach a larger audience. And it's going to give indie promotions a chance. And I laid this all out in a PW Torch livecast with ex-WWE creative team Matt McCarthy. And by the way, if anybody knows the date of that show, I'd love to pull it up and air that snippet this week on the livecast at some point. I don't remember what show it was on, but maybe somebody can research that and drop me a line at kellerwade@gmail.com or on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. But a couple years ago, I went over this whole thing with Matt. You know, hey, this is how indie promotions might be able to make some money and get a following. You don't need millions of dollars to help prop up some good wrestlers and some good bookers and give them another revenue stream to make things viable. This is an outlet that can do that in a way that has never been established before. There's several boxes that are checked on this that can make it work. It's a company that's kind of like WCW, is earning revenue from other places. So some areas are going to subsidize others, and they have, and that's going to happen as there's an ebb and flow, because Flow Sports started as a distribution model on pay-per-view of niche amateur sports, mostly amateur sports, that people were obsessed about but couldn't get access to anywhere else. And then now they're getting into pro wrestling also. But they have $21 million in funding they got in August. And so there's that money. And they have an app built for Apple TV and for Roku. And they have the funding and the infrastructure and the economies of scale, because they're marketing all of these different niche sports. There's an economies of scale that doesn't exist when you're just trying to launch a pro wrestling streaming outlet, because Flow Sports is much more than that. Flow Slam is just one channel on it, but the app is the same. So there's going to be a professional, well, hopefully, presumably, a professional interface that works out of the gate. And then you add to it big name indie promotions, perhaps New Japan or CMLL out of Mexico. I mean, there's Rev Pro and other groups out of the UK. I mean, the goal of this entity, from what I'm hearing, is to make this catch-all alternative for anything that's not under the auspices of WWE. And it's good for WWE, because they need more feeder systems. They need more companies that are viable, that can employ talented wrestlers who will get better to be the next Kevin Owens, the next Seth Rollins, the next Daniel Bryan. And this is a way to do that without hurting WWE Network, because I don't think the scale of their success even if they're successful, will be enough to hurt WWE. I think somebody paying $15 or $20 for this has it in their budget to also see WWE. I don't think there'd be a lot of people choosing one or the other all the time. So yes, I mean, it absolutely, I think, is going to be the potential. It absolutely has the potential, because of the structure, the funding, and the 2016 going on 2017, and the reach of social media and the internet, to create something of the wrestling blocks Pat of the late 1980s, or what Joe Pedicino and Gordon Solie eventually Bonnie Blackstone and Paul Heyman for a while, the Pro Wrestling This Week show in the late 80s, where you get to see wrestling from all over the country that you would have had to kind of scour YouTube for. And now you get it. You get to see their super shows under one roof, under one app. I mean, I'm excited by it. I hope they do a good job, and I hope that there's interest in it, but there's no guarantees. I mean, this is risky. It is
right.
You're jumping Impact because you agree. I mean, this is not a guaranteed success, but it's the best.
No.
It's the best, most well-funded platform that I've seen yet from the early indications. And so if it's going to work, I think this is what it was going to take to give it a shot.
Yeah, and really a lot of groups are going to say, what do we have to lose? And I,
right.
I don't know what the presentation is going to be on the Flow Sports end, but some people will obviously think it's worth the risk. And, you know, maybe it launches and maybe we get, 20 indie groups that aren't worth watching, but in the end, like two or three groups break through or a few new wrestlers break out, and that makes it worth our time.
Well, and one thing that's going to happen too is they're hiring a managing editor of the whole channel. There's going to be a face of the brand who will be on camera at the events doing interviews and that kind of thing. I mean, and there's going to be written articles. And I think what can happen too is you can have through social media or even on their own website, people who there will be sort of the ability for fans who watch a lot of it to basically upvote the best stuff. So indie promotions will have an incentive to compete with each other to get the most views by putting on the best product that people want to watch, and people will find out about it through various means. And so it really is a case for the larger, the internet, Reddit, Twitter, polls on Flow Slam's own website to draw attention to those who deserve it most. It'll be a meritocracy if it's done correctly. And that's exciting too, because it's hard to get noticed when it's just a bunch of things on YouTube. I mean, some wrestling clips go viral. It involves just a crazy high spot sequence or somebody drawing a lot of attention to their crotch. But it'd be nice for well-booked, good indie wrestling to go viral. So there's a chance for that to happen here. Pat, yeah, go ahead and jump in with some comments, and then we'll get close to wrapping up here. We might take another call though.
Okay, well, I think, again, tremendous potential. I think that there's probably going to be some tweaking between now and the time that they really launch it. I think there's probably going to be a couple of different, initial promotions like WWE has had with the network. And Lord knows they've had false starts and tried different things, and some has worked and some haven't. But, this sort of effort is good. It's probably going to be the future, something for the next few years, and then somebody will try to figure out the next way that pro wrestling is going to be distributed to people, and we'll get to work on that. I mean, it's difficult because you're almost at the point where technology is kind of outpacing the people who are producing the content.
Yep. All right. Very good. Let's go now to 903 next. 903, please state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Dustin. I'm calling from Texas.
Hey, Dustin, thanks for calling. What do you got for Pat and me?
Well, it's my first time calling on the show.
Oh, well, welcome to the show. How'd you hear about us?
I just got curiosity. I called in on the show with Bruce, that show he does Fridays, and then I tried to check this one out.
Where'd you hear about the livecast originally, though?
I just got this number, and I just started calling the podcast just to try them out, because I've only stick to two, and then I decided, well, what the heck, it wouldn't hurt to try some new ones.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so what have you got for us?
I enjoyed Money That Raw tonight, but the only thing I didn't like was the Brock Lesnar thing, where they're trying to get him to like where he's going to try to turn him heel. I just don't understand that. And then that wasn't going to work, to be honest. I really, really, I don't see why they just don't leave it the way it is. Have both of them sleep Brock the way he is. Don't try to turn him heel, and have him face the Goldberg, and have face to face, have him fight in a match, and then. In Raw with that powerbomb of Seth Rollins, which I don't like that very much. That was a little bit. Don't you agree that weren't they pushing that a little bit overboard there?
Well, I think if you're going to do it, you want to sell it. But the question is, should they be doing that? And do you really want to create Pat almost a sense of hopelessness for the babyface challenger going into the Hell in a Cell. I guess they want to create a sense of jeopardy, but I don't think you want to create a sense of hopelessness, assuming fans even, you know, take it seriously that that's how WWE would tell the story.
I don't know. Maybe they do want to create a sense of hopelessness, but I think if you're going to do a big spot like that, it probably helps to do it earlier in the show so you can have some time to sell the consequences of it, and you know, and make it and treat it more seriously than it got treated, because you're rushing off the air on Raw. You know, SmackDown is now a separate show where they're not going to have time to focus on this big thing that happened on Raw. So I think that I don't think it has the impact that it could have, and that's and for somebody taking, you know, somebody takes a bump like that, you want it to mean something.
Yeah. I mean, I they were selling it hard when they did it, but you're right. There's not a lot of time to follow up on it, given the way that they presented it. All right, I've got to run, so I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call here. Dustin, call back, and we'll try to give you more time next time. 530, Mitchell from Nashville. What's on your mind tonight for us?
Yeah, hey, I'm calling to mainly talk about the women's thing. You know, I've been hearing people, you know, like you guys have also been praising a little bit, but one thing I hate is gimmick matches. I hate that, you know, the Hell in a Cell is not being used as a way to end a feud like they did Triple H, Shawn Michaels back in the day. Their feud got so bad, the other wrestlers couldn't have put him apart. And Eric Bischoff said, you know what, put him in Hell in a Cell. We've got to end this. It's done. And now it's being used as we're making history. And only bring up at the very last Raw, by the way, this is dangerous. You don't want to do it. Do you really want to do it? And at that moment, they're like, we'll do it anyways because we want to make history. We want to prove that, you know, we're the baddest. No. In my opinion, Hell in a Cell should be the end-all, be-all. Not only should they be afraid of the cell, but they should be like, I'm afraid of what I'm going to do to you in that cell. That's what I'm afraid of. When Edge turned on the family to prove how violent he was to go against Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell, that's what I want to see. But I didn't see that from these girls. I mean, this promo tonight was good, but for me it was almost like too little too late. What do you guys think? Am I wrong in this, or maybe I should look forward to it. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, thanks a lot. Pat.
Yeah, it's tough when you have three different Hell in a Cell matches, and you know, at the end of the hype for all three of those, you don't feel like the stipulation got put over strongly enough. That's, I mean, and part of it is because be the end all be all anymore, because they're PG now. They're not doing blood. They're not doing guys getting thrown off the cell and risking their actual lives. So it kind of it sort of, I mean, you have to come up with something creative, and that's, you know, WWE doesn't always do creative finishes on the, you know, WWE's finishes might be creative in the wrong way, like the hologram, for example. Houston, hello.
Yeah, and part of the downside, it's just hyping three Hell in a Cell matches at once is kind of difficult too. As a PW Torch livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip. is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. All right, thanks everybody for putting up with some technical problems in the last 30 seconds there. Not sure what happened, but appreciate you joining us here on the PW Torch livecast Raw postgame show tomorrow, right after SmackDown. We'll talk SmackDown and who knows what else. And then Wednesday, Sam Roberts from the Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast joins me on the midweek flagship 1 Eastern. Interview Thursday at 1 Eastern this week on Thursday. And then Friday, primetime with Bruce and Travis. And then Saturday morning wrestling at 11:30 a.m. this Saturday. Thank you for your support, and follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller, at The Wade Keller, and follow our brand at PW Torch. And if you're an MMA fan, check out or follow us at MMA Torch also, and check out MMATorch.com. All right. Thanks to my guest co-host, Pat McNeil, for joining me today. And tomorrow we'll be talking about AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose and how that main event match goes as SmackDown continues to try to fill TV time until they can start hyping the Shane versus Stephanie battle of SmackDown and Raw in their various matches at Survivor Series. Until next time, Wade Keller thanking you and signing off. This is life.